This is Gavin Dahl with the KVNF Regional Newscast. Coming up, fish science research in the Grand Canyon and the importance of the U.S. Senate race here in Colorado. First, here's Jody Peterson with headlines.
Smoke is blowing into the KVNF listening area today from several different wildfires. Major fires are burning across the West, including in northern Arizona, southern and northern California, and the Pacific Northwest. Locally, there's also a wildfire in the Grand Junction area. Sparked by a lightning strike Friday night, the Pine Gulch Fire in Mesa County had grown to 1,500 acres as of Monday afternoon. The fire is mostly on remote Bureau of Land Management lands about 15 miles north of Grand Junction. A second person has died from COVID-19 in Mesa County. The death occurred Friday, reports the Mesa County Public Health Department. So far, the county has had 283 confirmed cases of COVID-19, and 7 of those people remain hospitalized. In mid-April, temperatures well below freezing walloped many Western Slope fruit growers. Now that we're well into peach season, the extent of the loss is becoming apparent. Some growers are producing more than half their normal crop, reports the Grand Junction Sentinel, while others say they'll get perhaps 20% of normal production. A few orchards lost their entire peach crops, as well as their cherries and apricots. Mesa, Delta, and Montrose counties were declared federal disaster areas due to the freeze, making it easier for growers to get emergency loans and other help. A Paonia woman faces 24 years in prison for second-degree murder, reports the Delta County Independent. Heather Jones was sentenced on Friday in Delta County District Court for the murder of Ryan Redifer. Jones shot Redifer at his Paonia home in January 2018, and he died from his injuries in September that year. A jury found Jones guilty of second-degree murder in March. For KVNF News, this is Jody Peterson.
Democrats are pushing to turn the Senate blue this November, needing just 4 more seats, Mountain West News Bureau's Madeline Beck reports.
Montana and Colorado are the big swing states of the Mountain West right now, and their Senate races are tight. Both include an incumbent Republican facing off with a Democratic governor or former governor.
The Democrats have a decent chance to pick up control of the Senate, and that very well could hinge on what happens in Colorado and Montana.
That's Robert Saldine, a political science professor at the University of Montana. He says that this region is unique. Democrats here tend to be moderate and are separating themselves from Democratic leadership, which is seen as more progressive.
It's a play that I think has a better chance of working in the Mountain West than it does elsewhere, just because of the number of Democrats and the number of Republicans in each state.
Saldine says regardless, polling is really too close to call for either race just yet. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Madeline Beck.
Colorado voters may only get one chance to see candidates for U.S. Senate square off in a debate before the November election. Capitol Coverage reporter Scott Franz has more.
Republican Senator Cory Gardner accepted 5 debate invitations, while Democratic challenger John Hickenlooper accepted 4. But right now, there is only one that both have agreed to, and it's in Pueblo on October 2nd. It will be televised and live-streamed. Hickenlooper has held double-digit leads in most polls. However, a recent survey suggests the race might be getting more competitive. It showed Hickenlooper with a 6-point advantage over Gardner. With their in-person events limited during the pandemic, both are running ads touting their records of helping Colorado's economy. But Hickenlooper's most recent ad focuses more on criticizing President Trump. I'm Scott Franz in Denver.
Field research in the Grand Canyon is just restarting after being banned all spring as a coronavirus precaution. Reporter Judy Faze of Inside Climate News visited before the pandemic.
Deep inside the red rock walls at the bottom of the Grand Canyon is where humpback chub hang out along the edges of the rushing Colorado River. Dennis Harris works with the U.S. Geological Survey, capturing the fish by stunning them with electricity in the water.
We liken it to an alien abduction.
That chubs tell their friends about back in the neighborhood.
Yeah, God, they came and took me away, and there was this big craft and lights, and I was drawn to the silver ball, and I don't know why. And they scooped me up in a net and took me to the mothership and brought me back here. And then all their friends go, yeah, right.
This spring, COVID-19 delayed fish counting, but fish science is truly important here. 40 million people in 7 states rely on Colorado River water for irrigation, drinking, and even hydropower. Endangered chubs stand in for the environment's health, and they'll be helping states, federal agencies, and the tribes decide how to manage the river for decades to come. The basin itself has drifted into alien territory lately. Current water agreements were drawn up in a fundamentally different world when the Colorado was gushing. Now, river flows are down 20% after two decades of drought, and climate scientists predict that could double or triple, just as the basin tribes want to develop their unused share of the river.
The pie is getting smaller.
Jack Schmidt leads the Center for Colorado River Studies at Utah State University. He says more users sharing less water means new pressure to revamp longstanding water agreements and a reckoning for anyone thinking they should keep getting the same share they've always gotten.
They can't keep the size of that slice when the whole pie is getting smaller.
Schmidt's team is digging into climate impacts on water supply and how fish might respond to follow-on changes to habitat. He says upcoming negotiations could bring future Colorado River management down to earth, factoring in the environment and climate while still providing clean energy and life-giving water throughout the basin.
I am actually very hopeful. I believe that climate change and the need to renegotiate agreements has brought us together.
Tribes have priority rights to a big share of Colorado River water, one-fifth. But they were not at the table when the so-called water buffaloes divvied up the Colorado in the past.
The system's going to protect itself to perpetuate, you know, what it already does.
Daryl Vigil of the Jicarilla Apache tribe leads the 10 tribes partnership.
It benefits those who already are doing okay. Familiar story, right?
Excluding basin tribes from the water bargaining table amounts to environmental injustice, he says, and that's got to end.
Let's figure out a way to better deal with each other on a sovereign-to-sovereign basis.
Water and the environment are living beings to Vigil, so it's never made sense to treat the Colorado like some giant plumbing system. Now, four decades of science have transformed that view by measuring how operations at Glen Canyon Dam harm the national park downstream.
This data set is really valuable in looking at where we've been in 20 years of drought.
Scott Vanderkoy of the U.S. Geological Survey heads the research that's already led to fiddling with the knobs on the Colorado's flows, restoring sandy beaches where 20,000 rafters camp each year, tracking vegetation, endangered species, wildlife, and even insect diversity. Vanderkoy doubts much has been lost because of the coronavirus pause this spring.
We believe the information we'll be able to collect the remainder of this summer will be sufficient to detect these longer-term trends.
Scientists are resuming those alien abductions deep in the canyon.
Unfortunately, no humpback chub, but we got a couple other species.
The research is bringing focus to the Colorado's real-world questions. But the data alone won't decide the river's future. Only people can do that. I'm Judy Faze.
That concludes the KVNF Regional Newscast. Thanks for listening.